This is tape number 3, recorded May 22nd, 1979, in Seal Beach, Leisure World. Okay, you're going to start out with when you start to get better after you've been ill.
I was still almost a year and been in and out hospitals, and I had 3 operations and part of my rib removed, and still I wasn't well enough to take a full-time job. My father helped me as much as he could financially, much as he could behind my stepmother's back, I might say. And then I started looking for some work, easy work, and I found an ad looking for someone in English to help them export English books to English-speaking countries. And that was the job I got. A half a day I did that then for quite a while. I sent books to Australia and to America and to all the countries that wanted it, where these peace organizations existed in all these countries. But that was the headquarters in Stuttgart. Well, as I got stronger and stronger, I thought, can you stop a minute?
Okay, we're going to start again.
Yes. It's going now?
Yeah.
As I waited and thought, my grandmother got sick and died, and she left me several hundred marks. And I thought, here's my chance to go back to Switzerland, and I first traveled around till all my money was almost spent, and then I landed in June in Zurich, and there was no job for children. The wealthy people were all out of the city, so the home I stayed in, St. Pierre's home, was run by sisters, Protestant sisters, and it was a home for traveling girls so they wouldn't get into trouble, because Geneva is a border city and a lot of girls happen to disappear. So they started these homes in all countries for governesses and other people that went to foreign countries to work. Well, when I got to that home, the sister had saved my dinner. And so they ushered me into the kitchen because the dinner was over, and she casually asked me, have you got the 45 francs that you need for registration? I said, no, I only have 7 francs left. I thought I could find work right away. So she said, well, you could get work right away because you know English in those cafes they have here as a waitress. Well, in my father's restaurant, we employed waitresses, and they didn't have very good names, although I thought it was a place where they served alcohol. I didn't know it was just really like our ice cream parlors here. And so I wouldn't go, but I, after dinner, she gave me the $45, and she said, but when you register, you have to give bring it right back to me. And I said I would, and I did. Well, then when that was done, I started to unpack, and all of a sudden they called somebody, Mommy Salzburger, and I didn't recognize my own name, so somebody came along and said, Seymour, that's you. So I went down to the office, and there was a Madame Schleppi looking for a governess to go away with her children. For the summer, they were already going to school, these children. Victor and Lucy was their name, and it was a swell job. But they told me in the fall when school started, they wouldn't keep me. Then the children were in school, and I said, well, I want to go and work in France anyhow. Well, you easy get a job too in the hotel that are all with French people and looking for help for their children and so on. So they practically promised me a job in the fall. And that happened when we came back from this little town, Champs-Élysées, where I was on a farm with the children. That was in proximity of Geneva so that the parents could come out every day for tea. They came to see the children. And even back then to the hotel when school time came around. And pretty soon there was Mr. and Mrs. Lenoir, bankers, that had two little girls, cutest things. I first thought they were twins, but they were a year apart. And they hired me, and they lived in Lyon, South France. And I was at that job when the 14th of August rolled around and war declaration. And I got the shock of my life. First of all, I knew my brother was in the army. Second, I knew I didn't know what was going to happen, and I wanted to get ready to go back to Germany now and could go back to America. Well, they said, you're a German, you're not American. Where's your papers? You're a German, and you've got to stay here. You're not allowed to go anywhere. So the people I worked for had influence. The grandfather was a general, retired, of these little girls. And they made it possible that I could stay at the job, stay with them. They were responsible for me, that I wouldn't go away or anything. And so I stayed a while. I said, two more months, August, September, October, about. Then it got so dangerous. I was the only German in that whole household and neighborhood, all wealthy people, and all the help was all French or Alsacian, and they hated me, and the men started spitting at me and cussing at me. And so one day I said to Madame Lenoir, I want to go in the camp. We called it the camp, where they had kept all the German and French women who had married German fellows. Because in Europe, you take on the man's nationality, whatever he is, you are. Well, so I went to this, it was a gymnasium belonging to a high school or to a school where they had us women. And it was no big hardship, except you had to carry in your own straw at night, your straw mattress, and you had to wind bandages, or if you wanted to knit, if you wanted to do, you had to do something for your food, which we did. But the French people were pretty nice to us. We had a good food, we treated fairly good for a place like that, but the German girls among themselves didn't get along. There were just so many enamel wash basins that one had to go after the other. We had to divide them up, and half of the girls came out of these public houses, and the other half were, like myself, nurses or people like that, and we didn't want to wash after them. There was no chance to clean the thing real good, so we got into fighting for them all the time. And this one morning, we fought good. We had each other by the hair over those wash basins. When the guards came in with ice-cold hoses and said, those damn Germans, they don't even get along among themselves, and hose was off. By then it was December, it was cold. Well, that's just one incident. Well, in 1915, in March, the news came about that we were going to be exchanged with the French women in Germany, which came about then, and we were sent to Geneva, over Geneva, back to Germany. I was all the rest, and some of those poor girls that had married German men didn't even know German language, but they had to go to. Well, I had found out over the help, with the help of the Red Cross, that my brother had become a flyer. And then when the minute I was in Germany, I found out from relatives that he was in Darmstadt, still in America, because he was getting ready to fly toward Russia. And so I had to travel to see him, yet before he would leave, I had traveled the rest of the night to Darmstadt, and I got there after midnight, and I didn't know the city. And again, with this book in my hand, which was always our sign that we could go to these homes. It had a star on it and the name. Finally, after getting a policeman in the middle of the night on the street, I asked for that home, and he walked me there. And I rang the bell, and a sister looked out top floor or somewhere up there, and I said what I wanted, and she said, "Wait a minute, I'll be down," and opened the door. Well, then I thanked the policeman, and he went, and I stood there maybe almost a half an hour. She put on the whole regalia, all her scissors and her beads and her hat and everything, and oh, it was so cold. Then she took me up, and there was one bed in a room with three beds and ice cold that I had to go into. I'll never forget that night. And in the morning, after coming from France, where we had all this beautiful bread and butter and what have you, there was a stale little, they called it the kitchen, there's a little bit of roll that must have been a week old, and some coffee that looked more like water. And but we first had to sing holy songs. One of the sisters sang songs. It was around Christmas, because it was around Christmas. And then a speech, and then we could eat our breakfast. Well, that breakfast was such a difference. I thought, gee, I would have rather stayed in church. Oh, well, then I saw my brother. I was in Darmstadt, and the next morning I found out where he was, and I saw him yet. He was there yet 2 days, and I stayed there 2 days. The only brother I had, and you always had to be afraid we'll receive him again if, on account of the war. After brother and I separated, said our goodbyes, I went back to Stuttgart then, and had one job in Stuttgart with wealthy people that were related with the Baruchs in America, and oh, they were so hungry after knowledge how it was in America, how New York was and everything. And the baby was only about, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks old when I got there. And that was a pretty good, and also I had a promise to stay a year because they don't like to change nurses with small babies. And it was a good job, but after a while it got so that everybody available had to do something for the government or for the war. So I got into ammunition, what they call the control person, to control before they went out that they had the right measurements, because if they didn't, they would explode and kill the soldiers at home. A job like that. Well, it got so, all my friends and everybody was always talking, "Why don't you get married? Why don't you get married? Who are you waiting for? Here you're this and this old." I think I was all of 21 or something by then. And finally, I didn't want to get married. I didn't want to get married. I had in my mind I was going to travel, take care of children, and go with people wherever they were going. And marriage wasn't at all in my plans. But hearing nothing else and thinking that a woman had no other destination but family and home, I got married when I had a chance. My husband was a friend of my brother's, and he brought him home once, or brought him to Stuttgart, and we got acquainted and engaged, and then when the war was almost over, married, and he had to go again. And when he came back, he was such a wreck of a man, so sick that they had to put him in a hospital, raggedy, and had a shot through the stripes, you know, not through the brain, but it, still he was hurt. A little service wound on his brain, which affected his thinking. But I still hoped and wished that he'd get better and that we could eventually have a family. My reason, my main reason for getting married was to have children, have a child. And we were together long enough that I got pregnant, but he was too sick by the time his son was born. He never saw him. He eventually got so pessimistic and so depressed but they couldn't get him off a chair hard. He couldn't do no thinking, no acting, no nothing. And that's when I thought, oh, there's nothing for me and my son except to get back to America. Now, being not a citizen, America had closed their doors toward all non-Americans, especially toward Germans. And so, but I didn't give up hope. I kept talking American, saying to my father and to my friends and my brother. My brother came home a cripple. He had one leg gone and a foot gone and part of his face gone. He was a whole year in the hospital, so he was mended and could be on the streets again. Everybody I told that I was going back to America, I wasn't going to stay in this poor country, and they said, oh, you just have illusions. You have pipe dreams. You haven't got no money. You're going to have this small baby. And how can you get to America? You haven't got nobody to sponsor you over there. And I just didn't take no for an answer. When I could get a foreign dollar or a lira or any foreign money when the war was over, then I collected them and gave. I got a job, funny way. I was first helping my father, but that didn't pay hardly anything. But where I lived, there was a concern that sold linen wholesale to stores, and they could use me, and they did use me in the office to categorize and to help. And then I saw how much money the people made that went out and sold to the stores, brought in orders. And I asked him for a job like that, and I was a very good salesperson. I made the biggest sales, and I had a wheel and went from town to town. Sometimes I had to stay overnight, and I had a woman that would keep my baby. And so I made money, that kind of money, that inflated money. I had plenty of it. And so when my uncle was right away sent to Italy to do a special job. And in the family and friends, a lot of men had to go out to jobs, but they knew how. These people had, these concerns had bought from Germany, and they had nobody to repair them and send them. So that kind of work was plenty, and whenever they came home, I know my uncle came home, my father's brother, and I bought his 7 liras. And I said, how much is it? Well, I had to call the bank for it. How it stands, you couldn't buy anything. In the morning, it was half the price what it was at night. It was a terrible situation. But due to the fact that I wasn't poor, I had my household and all, I had hopes that I could go to America someday. I went to a man where we always bought tickets from an agency, Mr. Wagner, and he knew me from childhood up, and I said, I want to go on top of your list. If America opens their doors, and they will someday, I want to be first on the first boat that goes up. Well, he says, there is no list yet. There's no use leaving your money here. I'm going to, all the money that I collect, foreign money, I'm going to bring to you so that I'm going to be one of the first in my. People laughed at me for doing that. And when mail went through again, all my friends here that I knew, all of them almost, when they heard I had a baby, sent me money and sent me clothes. I had the cutest baby clothes from America out there. Everybody remarked about it because they had nothing left, nothing. Well, anyway, it took a long time and I couldn't think nothing but Americans. America, I go to America and what I'm going to do and all this and that. And my father just laughed at me when all of a sudden the hometown, your Stuttgart, Feuerbach, had an ad in the paper, anybody that will willingly give up their right to live, get an apartment or a house, get so and so many thousand marks of fabulous money. I think it was 250,000. And no other city had done that. The city I lived in, it paid nothing. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to move up to Feuerbach and see it so that I had the right to live there. I would give up my apartment in Heilbronn. Well, after a while, I put an ad in the paper. I got a response from a postal employee that had a beautiful apartment in Stuttgart, and he needed to come to Heilbronn because he got a job, which was a better job with the postal authorities. And it took something to convince him to take my smaller and not such a nice apartment, not such a good location either. But I said, if you take it, if you change with me, I'll pay for your moving. And that did the trick then. He wanted to get there and hope that he could change up with after a while. And so I had this beautiful apartment that belonged to me. But my furniture, we didn't put in there. I put that right away in my father's house. He had a, for his foot business, he had a solid building in the back, and we put it all in there. And by me waiting maybe 3 months or something, my father kept saying, that can't go on. That money will come up again. I wouldn't sell my things now. I waited and waited, but the money was getting worse and worse. So we put in the paper that we had a household to auction off the time and all, and so the people came. And there was a man that did it professionally. He got a certain percentage of it. And I got a fabulous amount of money because things were so scarce. And then in Germany, a household, they had all these tubs for washing and a mango for drying, and you had barrels for your cider and a lot of things attached to a household that the Americans don't even know. They don't need it. So I did get a great amount of money and for my things, but then my father said, don't do anything with it. Leave it on the bank. It's going to get more. It's going to be worth more. And said it was going back and back. But I had enough money when finally I convinced some old friend of my uncle and aunt to send a sponsorship for me. This paper, somebody has to sponsor you when you're not a citizen. I got that sponsorship, and I had the money to buy the ticket. Now, all I was waiting for was to America to welcome us back, Germans, and that came in 22. End of 22, and I waited over Christmas and came back in 23. And the whole thing to me now seems like a miracle because when I got to the American offices that say whether you can go in or not, they asked me, how come you got a child, such a young child, and you come? And it was like something told me to say that, I know English and I know how to get work, so I came first. And I said, if I'd have said that he was ill from the war and mentally ill, I would have never had a chance. And then they believed me too because my boy was out there with him. And I made it look like he's singing maybe. Well, I did think that I could make it possible and that he would get better and that eventually they would come together, but that never happened.
So, let me ask you, I don't understand about, you said that if you would give up your right to an apartment, you could sell it for money?
Yeah, the township, the city, the government, because they had so many young people who wanted to get married and they couldn't live. You see, generation goes on and the soldiers come home and wanted to get married and all that. So, but you couldn't move into any city unless you had from the government the paper that you were allowed to. They didn't let people come from Hungary or Italy or from any other place to move in. It was like we had the OPA here, just stricter. So when I had, I was allowed to give that Heilbronn apartment up for one Feuerbach, and it was a beautiful one. I, from the city hall, I got the paper right away to do it. But you see, that all had to be worked out before I could say I'm going. Then I couldn't leave my little boy with my stepmother. I wouldn't trust her. So my cousin, I had a cousin I grew up with. She had a boy, a little boy, and she said, I'll keep him And because her husband was going to his aunt and uncle in New York and getting work through them, they had a big bakery. And then she was to bring my little boy, my son, with her son. And she was ready in a year or so to go, but America refused to let him in because I might become a public subject to be with my son. So then I thought, well, then I have to go back. I would have gone back again, and I told Mrs. Lunger where I was working then as a nurse about it. She talked to her husband. This was another Jewish family. And it wasn't easy for them to get for three girls somebody. They were not easy to have. You know, they were spoiled. And she talked with him, and they called me, and they said they would be willing if I would accept that plan, they would be willing to vouch for me so that he could come in. And if something would happen to me, they would adopt him because they had no son. They weren't getting any more children. They would have adopted my baby if I'd have died. So that was sort of a security for me. And they knew me well enough to know that I would work and make the money somehow, which I did. Then they allowed me, even the girls were in school, they allowed me to go to school certain hours, and I took up cosmetology, hairdressing and all that, in many months, paid it, but these people made it possible because I tended to the children's clothes and everything anyhow, and was there when they wanted to go out even. That was a very nice arrangement. So finally, even before the boy came, I had started this already because I knew when he came I wanted to have him at home, be situated so I could raise him by myself, which I did. And they were real nice, they really helped me. And he came then, and my cousin, when I was finished and ready to work on that job, on that beauty parlor work, I got a job and her husband got a job, and together we got a big apartment and had a couple of rooms to rent. Somebody slept in the dining room so we could rent some room. So we got on our feet, money-wise. And I had to fight my way through to get a good-paying job because I took the Maranella training, and they put in your head you shouldn't become a slave to irons. They gave us a nice scientific education on that subject, and it guided us a little not to go in, that you just would Marcel Waif all day with the irons. You shouldn't do that. You should take advantage of this training. So I went out looking for a job with big ideas. I didn't know. I was fired in three jobs in 1 week because I went in only in these high-class places. And one, well, I could sell myself well, but when they gave me a manicure to do, or if they could see right away that how green I was at it. And one fellow, the boss, was from Stuttgart. He was German. And so he gave me the job. I told him my situation. And then he gave a permanent. The permanents were very new then. And very few shops would give them. And I had to help him, hand him things while he did it, and he got that permanent. Too curly, nobody knew too much about it. And when he took the rollers out, they were crooked all then. There were these ones that stand up, and you were hooked up to the ceiling. Well, when he took it out, the woman had like wool, and he said to me, quiet, get the vinegar. I didn't know where it was or what, so back there I call out, where is the vinegar? And that was supposed to be a trade secret. Well, when that woman was finished, he said, you don't even know how to walk in a beauty shop, let alone work. He was so mad. He gave me a few dollars. I know I stayed with my aunt. By then I had an aunt was over there already, but I stayed with while I was in New York, and I cried, I'll never get into this business. Learning it practically, making money with it, is a different thing than going to school. That's what I needed. I found that a Madame Cochran that had just a swell place, we had a colored girl as a maid, and there were 7 booths, and she was constantly on the job to see that you did everything right. Everything was bad, the comb and the brush and little tapes and all, and she would stand behind the curtain and watch me. If I had to start with, I had to get the patrons ready for whatever they were having, and she'd pull my skirt or my uniform and take me in the back and say, you don't even know how to put towels around properly, and oh boy, did she dress me down. But it was a good lesson for me. I was with her a year and a half, and then I could go and say I was a beautician. And it was up in Upper Mount Clare where all rich people are. And years later, I got just into such a shop where they let me do Marcelin too. That was the hardest about the beauty business. And you had to do those Marcelins for the ladies for weeks at the same wave, and that's really an art, and to do it and not burn the hair and all that. And that was the highest paying work. Well, I got into that too after a while. Then comes this crash of the stock market, and we had all such people, the wealthy people. Like, I worked on Tom Edison's wife and people like that, actresses, opera singers, and wealthy people. So we lost right away a lot of money, a lot of patronage, and she had to cut us back and all that. Well, I went over to New York where it was a little better and looked for a job. We still lived together, but that was such a different kind of beauty shop. I had to start working from 8 till 2 in the morning in the Bronx. Those people were up at night and sleeping late. And oh, it was awful. And I had put my son in the school up on the Hudson because I couldn't afford it then. Well, I had to stop that and get him home and make him different arrangements. And it's just another collapse. Finally, it came so badly that you had to do 4 jobs for $1, a manicure, shampoo, wig, and a trim. And you couldn't make no money. The owners, they say, you can work in here, but you're on your own, but you couldn't make nothing. So I went back to nursing. Got my cousin to take my son again, and then nursing in it. See, I had the fundamentals of nursing. I found a job with a family where the grandma was not right in her head. They had a big in over near New York. They had a big, big place to live in, and so I had to sleep next to her. And she was dangerous if she got me to be afraid of her. I couldn't have stayed. And she was a compulsive eater. She bought books just 8 day and night. You had to watch her. She didn't run off and go to these diners. No, a rich lady with all the diamonds and all. Just eating. Well, that's some of the things when I came back to America. That's how that went on. Can you shut it up for a minute? Let me answer.
Okay.
Well, in that period in New York, and when I was here alone, I didn't have many friends, but I had to get busy at something and going to lectures. And having lived through that part of political life in Germany of the war, I would always get in on the discussions. And they had a part of the New York Staatszeitung. They had 2 German editions daily, and they were full of politics about what had happened in Europe and so on. I've got to answering there.
That's a German language
newspaper. The Herald was the evening paper, and the morning paper was the Staatszeitung, and they have a big ticket, a big Sunday paper. It takes in the happenings in Germany too, you know, and everything here. You get acquainted in a city when you're a stranger in your own language paper better than you do in English, because it's not so familiar to you. And is it on?
Yeah.
And in my spare time, I studied that Sunday paper, and I went to lectures, and it kind of opened my mouth. I know one evening there was such a ridiculous article in about what had happened in Germany. They had it all. So I sat down and answered. This was a whole page of that paper was given to the readers for controversy. And I became so active that I and another woman that signed herself Tribuna, we were the main writers. We were for modern woman, that a woman should have the right, just like a man, and the wages. You see, that's quite a few years back. And so the men would answer and put us down politically, and how we belonged in the Kinderstube and the child's room and in the kitchen, and the women were never as smart as men. And can't be this, I used to write articles to people. So then after a while, I got into a different, they wanted me to write. The paper paid me then, not much, but I got paid in another German. It was called a newspaper for new immigrants, German. And they paid me all of 5 cents a sale, 5 or 6 words, 5 cents. And I thought that was great. You know, I hadn't learned it, but through doing it so long, they kind of shaped me into it. I've got a whole book with articles out there, yet it's getting yellow, and with the heading on, From the Woman to the Woman, with the heading of my German woman's page. Then after I studied cosmetology and all that, I could write on those subjects. If they asked me to go and write, for instance, all about how diamonds became so valuable and where they were first, happened from, then I went to the library on Sundays and studied it, and evenings I would write, and that was my hobby all through life, and that's what made me get through those 2.5 years. My boy wasn't here. That was a terrible thing, you know.
And yeah. Did they put out a special supplement for new immigrants, or?
Yeah. No, a page, a section of the paper, yes. No, this new newspaper was a writer, an editor, that thought it was the time was right for a newspaper like that, because after America opened their doors, the whole quarter was filled. They came in and did. But the newspaper didn't last very long, because then the big papers did the same thing with a section of their paper. And so the other didn't take so well. But I stayed until 32, till I went to California. I stayed at that writing to the paper.
How long did the one the woman's page last?
That newspaper lasted only a year and a half.
And then what did you do?
Well, I kept writing to the big paper all the time. But we weren't allowed to sign our right name, and you know my name was Philomena, and they made Minnie out of it. So out of a dear sky, what should I sign it with? I allowed Monica, and that's why so many people, all my friends and acquaintances from then on, kept calling me Monica. And that's how that stuck. My middle initial is M, so it just took that. But my bank name is Minnie M. I mean, all my official signatures. So I kept busy at that writing. And
what did you write for the big paper after
Well, I wrote on all kinds of subjects, but mainly how we were discussing Hitler and some of those that had come before Hitler. You know, writing like the dumb thing and we attacked Germans our own, you know, saying how could they fall for a guy like that and all this and that. That went all back and forth. Then the woman's question was very active. And the American way of life versus European way. And I sometimes, just the fist flowed out of my hand politically, because I was on fire. And I was red. They asked me and answered me, so that's what kept me on with a big paper. And when I came out here, again, I had a bill the clientele when I opened that beauty shop on $25. And so I joined the Mozart Ladies Chorus. That's a singing organization. It was a nice hobby to have, especially after my son was in the school. And we put on concerts. And while I wasn't a great big voice, I was a good business manager for them. Got in their ads. Our concerts always cost $1,000 and over, the soloist and the music and then the dance music and what have you. And we held it in the Los Angeles, has this tuna hall that they built, and then and now in the Hitler time, the Germans here lost, but they sold it to still in existence. It had a gymnasium, a Turnverein, you know, and all the clubs that there were. You surely remember all the stuff in the paper about the Bund. Well, automatically the people belong to the Bund. For instance, our Mozart chorus had to be a member loosely to the Bund. There were hiking clubs, singing clubs, sewing clubs, anything German belonged loosely to this Bund. And they had some wild admirers of Hitler in there that tried to direct the thing their way, pull it over towards what they call National Socialism. And we fought them, and we even got in Los Angeles in the court, and it cost all the clubs $6,000. And the court that had higher official positions and were friends to them helped them to the other part. Against the Hitler's laws that in Los Angeles cost us $6,000. We had to pay the court costs. And they were not victorious. But the Germans didn't let them come up anyhow, because the people that lived here couldn't understand it and didn't sympathize with them. So I never forget my son still left. They went out to the German park. I was on the committee when we bought that park out in Los Angeles on Verdugo Road out there. Nice that the government bought it later on from it, because in the Hitler time you couldn't have a German park and picnics. You wouldn't. Well, anyway, when we were there, one German day, every year there's a German day somewhere, and it used to be in that park, because it's big enough. They, youth, German youth that belonged out there maybe to the Hitlerites, wanted to pull the Hitler flag up first. Oh, boy, did they hit them. They got so badly the ambulance had to come and tore it down, and put the American flag up, of course. But they were so fanatic about it, and too green in this country, else they would have known that they wouldn't stand for that here. So that was one of the incidents. And then a man came from Europe to lecture over here, and they were going to throw our club out of this union, because we went to hear that man. And oh boy, when new officers were being elected, they had split their ladies' club and their club into a few members in each, so they would have the bigger voice when elections came up. And that very night on that election, after it was almost all settled that we and some others that went to hear that man speak were going to be cast out. We couldn't belong anymore. I got up and I was so mad. I never was so mad in my life. I said, why don't you young people go back to Hitler, Germany? We don't need you here. And they had it thrown under the table. They couldn't let it come to vote, because I would have won, not faced. And you see, so there was this battle that didn't belong here at all, but because America got into it, and with all this elements here, and then a new one's coming over. There was a lot to battle about in newspapers, you know, to talk about, in other words.
The part about the court case is not clear to me.
Well, we took them to court saying it wasn't fair what they did. They split some of their organizations that they called clubs, had maybe only two or three members, in order to win that election. That's what we took him to court for. And they had so many friends. They were mostly all educated people, but I must say they knew English badly, but they could speak it.